We are right up against Christmas time. It is a time where I would say diabetes is very prevalent. There's a lot of sugar. There's a lot of alcohol. There's a lot of things driving up. There's a lot of stress driving up blood sugars. So that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about the things that drive insulin resistance and weight loss resistance, in turn weight loss resistance, that are not just diet and exercise.
Yeah, because we have a lot of people who lose weight eating plenty of carbs in our program, and carbohydrates are not the devil. It is really the dysfunction in the body, and I would say imbalance, because carbohydrates, certainly, they add up quickly, right? They're one of the easiest things to overeat. If you turn labels over and you're like, dang, this has 47 grams of carbohydrates in this bagel with no fat and no protein, and people are seemingly eating that slathered with some cream cheese, as well as their Starbucks sugary latte that has like 89 grams of sugar. So it's easy.
A bagel hits, though.
Oh, a bagel hits.
Bagels are delicious.
I just got the gluten-free everything bagel ones from Trader Joe's this week, and then I've been doing the air fryer with my cottage cheese on top. So good.
They're my pre-workout. That's what I do. I do a gluten-free bagel with a little bit of butter or nut butter pre-workout. And it's easy to digest. It's quick energy for a pre-workout. I wouldn't do it like daily when I'm not working out or, you know, any other time. But when you do it right and when your body's healthy, you can enjoy things like bagels, guys. But besides the point.
Yes. So we're going to give you different things that would relate to insulin resistance and be what we would call core contributors to them, and really root causes. And I think that, as always, you know, when I just preference, this is really about giving you the education and knowledge for you to then go back and look at your lifestyle, look at your lab work, do some evaluations, think about, you know, what are things that you can improve in your life and your nutrition as well, because a lot of these deficiencies that we're going to talk about and things that contribute are because people are eating a standard American diet. Maybe they're tracking macros, but they're not really looking at the nutrients and the micronutrients in their food, right? They're just thinking solely about calories. I'm eating 1200 calories a day. Like, if you listen to the podcast for a long time, you know, Liz and Becca, we have been there. I did the Weight Watchers. I bought everything that just told me how many points it was because it was easy. I bought the 100 calorie snack packs, the Jenny Craig bars, meals, whatever, you know, all of those things back in the day. And a lot of it was Franken foods. It's not one ingredient, real food and food that's alive, basically, right? So the first thing that we want to talk about here is nutrient deficiencies, vitamin B1 and B2. All right. If you're dealing with water retention, you're waking up puffy, your ankles or your wrists are really swollen, or you can't get your rings off, and maybe you're even dragging throughout the day, no matter how much water you drink, there's actually a good chance that you're not actually hydrating properly.
Exactly. Because water alone is not enough. You need electrolytes. You need sodium, potassium, magnesium, because those things actually pull water into your cells. Otherwise, you're basically just flushing it out and wondering why you're still tired, you're still bloated, and you're still sluggish.
But here's the thing. Most electrolyte supplements out there aren't helping you in any way, because a lot of them contain things like natural flavors, food dyes, and maltodextrin, which can irritate your gut. And these things can also spike your blood sugar when you're trying to heal.
That's why we both started using Bui. It's super simple. There's trace minerals and electrolytes in liquid form. No flavors, no colors, no sugar, no sweeteners. And you squeeze it into whatever you are drinking. Water, coffee, tea, smoothies, you name it.
And it's clinically backed by science too. So studies have shown that Bui helps you hydrate better, 64% better in fact. And that's data coming from key blood and urinary markers, not just marketing fluff. And honestly, you can feel the difference. I've had many clients tell me their digestion's improved, they have less headaches, and they're better energy throughout the day.
And Bui isn't just for people that go to the gym all the time and sweat a bunch. They actually offer a 35% lifetime discount for anyone that's struggling with chronic illnesses. Things like POTS, Hashimoto's, Crohn's disease, chronic migraines, and every autoimmune condition. They're really committed to making better hydration accessible to people who need it most.
I actually throw it in my coffee every morning because it's such an easy upgrade. You don't even taste it, but you're definitely going to notice if you miss it.
If you're tired of playing hydration roulette and want something that actually supports your body, you've got to try Bui. It's honestly one of the simplest ways to feel better faster.
So theamine and riboflavin, because these run the biochemical engines that burn glucose for energy. They also play a role in your body's ability to convert other sources into glucose to maintain good energy. But when we look specifically at vitamin B1, theamine, this is really important for mitochondrial health. We see it depleted in cases of mold mycotoxin illness when there's a lot of oxidative stress in the body, when the person is dieting for a really long time, they have low blood sugar. There's a lot of reasons why this can become deficient in the body, but it's needed for the Krebs cycle to produce energy. It's also needed to support efficient glucose use, so transport of glucose and then obviously burning it off in the cells. And it's needed for the pentose phosphate pathway. A deficiency can increase oxidative stress and slow the energy production. So again, we're thinking about the mitochondria, the powerhouse of the cells. If they are not able to get the nutrients they need, then in turn, they're not going to be able to turn the energy or the power on the way that we want in terms of producing ATP. And then when we look at riboflavin, which is vitamin B2, this is required for that mitochondrial ATP production. So low levels equal low cellular energy and then therefore poor insulin signaling. Because what you need to remember about insulin is that it's like a taxi cab. So if you imagine, this is my analogy, I'd love to hear Becca's too, but the way that I kind of look at blood sugar and glucose is if you think about the insulin as your delivery person, right? Like I am bringing blood sugar to the door. I need someone to open the door so that I can accept the package. I can burn off the nutrients. So think of insulin as like your Amazon delivery guy.
Like a key to a lock.
A key to a lock that works too. Yep. I just know I have way too many Amazon packages arising every day. And I'm like, I need to collect those packages inside my house so that I can use these things rather than leave them on my front doorstep.
Or they will get moldy. They will get, you know, more damaging to what you have out there, right? And that's how blood sugar is, right? So, and blood sugar is supposed to rise, guys. Like this is something a lot of people get overworked on is like, oh, I don't want any blood sugar spikes. Blood sugar spikes are bad. No, you need blood sugar to spike. Like that is a healthy response to the body. You don't want it to spike too long or too high, but a healthy blood sugar response is a healthy metabolism. You just want it to come back down. And unfortunately, when someone is chronically stressed, when the cell is unhealthy, when you're not eating enough, all these different things, the cell basically just shuts itself off to receiving anything into it and getting anything out of it. And so this is where a lot of times also too low of insulin becomes a problem, because if you don't have any insulin floating around, you don't have any of those keys to the locks to get things in. And a lot of times low insulin is the beginning of high blood sugars for people and people that are under eating or under eating carbohydrates. And so it really, like, dietary things do matter, but for a lot of the people that we talk to, they're already doing those things. They're already doing the eating healthy. They're already doing the exercise, which is why we want to talk about, okay, in those cases, a lot of them are chronically stressed. A lot of them are dealing with infections, mold, mycotoxin, gut infections, hormonal imbalances, all these things. That is where you need to look at these pieces and nutrient deficiencies. It's the easiest low-hanging fruit. A bottle of thiamine is $15. And most people are thiamine deficient that are chronically stressed. And then you're not going to be able to manage blood sugars even with all the little tools and strategies around diet. And same thing with B2. But I think probably the biggest thing that is a root cause of glycogen and glucose issues is your liver. So this is number two, which is liver health. Your liver controls glucose storage. So when you have liver stores in the body, you're looking at the liver. The liver can store about 100 grams of glucose a day. Your muscles, those are the other storage spots. The muscle can store a lot more, especially the more muscle you have. You can store up to like 300 to 400 grams of carbs a day. I'm sorry, glucose, sugar, carbohydrates, whatever. You can store about 300 to 400 grams of carbohydrates a day in your muscle if you have adequate muscle tissue. The less muscle you have, the less space you have to store carbohydrates. This is why muscle is so forgiving when it comes to metabolic health. But the liver is the main piece because the liver is also responding to stress. And so the liver stores glucose, it releases glucose in response to cortisol, and it also helps lipid metabolism. So if there's too much glucose floating around in the bloodstream and it can't get into cells, guess what? It goes to the liver and the liver converts it to triglycerides. And this is where we see high triglycerides. High triglycerides have nothing to do with fats. They have nothing to do with dietary fat intake. They have so much more to do with carbohydrate and glucose fat, glucose intake. And then the liver obviously also controls detoxification. So when insulin resistance develops, the liver starts pushing out too much glucose. The body then stores it as excess fat in the form of triglycerides. And this is what develops non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. And it also starts producing more inflammatory cytokines and reactive oxygen species. And it kind of creates this vicious cycle where you have liver dysfunction, which worsens insulin resistance. This is where also poor detoxification abilities start to worsen insulin resistance. Even if someone's eating healthy, if they have too many toxins going through the process, hormone imbalances going through the process, the liver is what has to help package those things up. If it can't do that because there's too much of an input, or there's too slow of a back end, phase two in methylation, sulfation, glucuronidation, all of these different phases of detoxification, well, now you have a backed up burdened liver, and it starts to worsen blood sugars, starts to worsen insulin resistance, and overall liver dysfunction.
Yep. And then we have to think about stress. And this is one thing. I just got my Dutch test back, and I'm like, yeah, still low metabolized cortisol. It looks a little bit better than the Dutch test prior to Ethan, but still pretty low. We were messaging, and Lindsay's like, congratulations, your adrenals are shot. I was like, girlfriend, you've not been around. They've been shot for a long time.
I'm somehow still operating.
I'm like, at least my body is favoring cortisol. It's keeping active. It's not shutting down to cortisone. So anyways, I'm joking about this, but it is true because I also just did, you know, blood work, and I saw, okay, hey, my insulin is a little bit low. So like, I need to balance these things out, and I need to get some of these, you know, B vitamins in place and support my body. But really, when we think about chronic stress, so cortisol mobilizes glucose all day long. It's not just our stress hormone. It's a hormone that plays a role in balancing your blood sugar. And so we know that short-term stress is normal. We're supposed to be able to fight and then flee, but instead we just stay there and freeze. So when we think about this, I'm talking about a parasympathetic versus a sympathetic state. Most people are stuck in this fight, flight, or freeze sympathetic dominant states that we're not ever getting into that parasympathetic, where we really want to rest and digest and calm down and relax. Okay, so we know many of us experience this chronic stress, and these stressors can be a lot of things. They can be internal stressors that you don't even realize are going on, hidden, you know, viral or bacterial infections, exposures to things in your environment that maybe your body's currently handling, but you're almost at that tipping point. You're noticing some symptoms are starting to creep up. And so that could be anything from, hey, I walk into somebody's house and I notice they've got those Glade nasty diffusers. By the way, if you're gonna use a diffuser or like a wall plug, get the good ones. Come on, guys.
Get like Glade. Some essential oils.
I'm saying like Bath & Body Works at least has some good smelling ones. Good
smelling ones. If we're talking toxic, yeah, go to Bath & Body Works.
Like, good God. I'm making a post right now, and it's all about like my 80s ladies, and I'm talking about like dousing myself in Limited 2 glitter all over the body.
Chokers. I used to wear the chokers.
Yep. We had every scent from Bath & Body Works, and we had like, it would be like, what, buy three, get three free or something. Mm-hmm. And so we had everything in it, right? But anyway, so it could be things that you're putting on your body, not just like in your body in terms of food and those types of things, but it could be stuff that's really stressing your body out and you don't even know this. So it's like also going back to the drawing board and saying, hey, do I need to clean my environment up? Do I need to clean my food up? Do I need to drink more water and go back to some of those foundational things? But also really looking at all the things and the hats that you wear, how much is on your plate, and how much are you expecting yourself, you know, to get done every day? Because really, I think most of us are unrealistic. I know for me, I'm definitely still unrealistic. And I know my husband's told me it's going to be twice the time, and, you know, anything you want to do, especially if it's like a big project plan, that it's going to take you double the time than you initially think that it is. And then if you get time back, great. But instead, I still think in the next 45 minutes, I'll get three massive protocols done and seven emails and five messages back. So it's also, you know, just one of those things where look at your personality and evaluate this for yourself. But going back to how does this impact, you know, insulin resistance? So cortisol raises blood sugar. That's its job. We know because essentially, cortisol saying, okay, I see a threat, I've got to respond. So I need energy. So I produce blood sugar, whether I create that and pull it from the liver, or I create it from stored amino acids or other things in the body, I've got to have the energy I need to fight whatever it's feeling, you know, that it's being chased by a bear right now. Really, it's just the email that you opened or your kid screaming at you. And you're like, oh my God, how many times have you said, mom, mama, mom, dad, dada, where's dad? When's dad coming back? Mom, why are you leaving? Where are you going? It's like, we've had this conversation for the last 2 hours about
Taylor has this thing where like, she'll ask me a question. Mom, where's my jump rope? I'm like, Taylor, it's on the chair. What? It's on what? And I'm like, Taylor, it's on the chair. Okay. I don't mean to scream right now, but I've told you three times. And it's just the voice that she had. What?
Oh my God.
What?
One of the moms the other day said she asked her like daughter, like, how can I be better for you? Like, what bothers you? And she's like, when you yell. And so I was like, wow, praise Jesus. So she's like, now, after the third time, I say, I will be yelling because this is the third time I'm saying it and you're not hearing me apparently, or you're not listening, right? So it's like a warning sign of what you don't like is coming.
No, but anyways, Mark can still, the one thing that I like live with is like, they still love me somehow, even though the days I get so angry and I have such a short temper with them. Like then when Nick goes to be, you know, let's go get a bath, kids, they just run to me and they're like, mom, I want mom to give me a bath. I want mom. And they like hang on me. And Nick's always like, how does that feel? What does that feel like? So I don't know what that feels like for my kids to love me.
Oh my gosh. I guess kids love him. Okay. Going back to cortisol here. So when cortisol stays elevated, cortisol should rise and fall, right? We know that we have this cortisol awakening response. We wake up, we should get a rise in cortisol, and then it should slowly dwindle down throughout the day. But when it's chronically elevated because of this chronic stress, blood sugar rises, and at the same time, insulin rises because insulin's like, hey, we got to unlock. We got to, you know, help out here because there's too much blood sugar floating around the bloodstream. But when we're not unlocking and we're not burning off all of this fuel, fat storage increases and therefore our metabolic flexibility tanks. A couple of things that are really important here too when we are on the side of low adrenal function. So low blood sugar, this hypoglycemia picture. And so symptoms with this would be, hey, I ate, but about an hour, 2 hours later, maybe 3 hours, I am crashing. I'm feeling like crap. I'm craving. I'm moody. I'm dizzy. I'm nauseous. I'm snappy, right? And I want sugar. I want carbohydrates. Where's that 3 p.m. fix? A lot of this is because your blood sugar is dropping too low and your body is not able to release enough glucose from glycogen, as we talked about. Becca mentioned that it's stored right in your muscles, or produce glucose from non-carbohydrate substrates. So things like amino acids. So there's some things that you can look at and, you know, your blood work to look at this and see. And we see this a lot for several clients, actually. It's kind of been a hot topic with a few of the practitioners that I mentor because we're going back and we're saying, okay, she's got insulin resistance. She's weight loss resistant. She's fasting. She's doing all the things right. But hey, let's look at her labs. And we're seeing that our glycogen stores are really depleted. And the body relies on protein for gluconeogenesis. And gluconeogenesis is basically converting amino acids from protein into sugar. We have talked about this on the podcast indirectly, mm-hmm. but I think it's really important to understand, why does that start happening? I went through it. I believe Becca went through it. But for me, I was low blood sugar, then I went high blood sugar, and then I kind of rebalanced. And then now I'm noticing, hey, sometimes, and it aligns with my cortisol, I'm getting that low blood sugar feeling. I am feeling so tired. My cortisol is dropping in the afternoon. Then I'm going back and looking, hey, I need more amino acids in my storage tank. So, and I also need to be able to break that protein down and metabolize it and absorb it to store it. So this is where the digestive capacity comes to play, stomach acid, pancreatic enzymes, eating enough protein, assimilating that to the, you know, storage form. And then you can look at this on your blood work too. So total protein, you want to see this above a 6.8. Your albumin above a 4 and your globulin above a 2.5. If you're below any of those, then you're probably struggling with assimilation and you need to have some adrenal support, absolutely, because you're probably burning the candle at both ends like I am, and I could see that on my Dutch test as well. But you also want to increase your vitamin B6, P5P. Mm-hmm. And this is crucial for that metabolism and gluconeogenesis. I just shot a reel on it this morning and I was talking about, think of it this way. If your blood sugar is, you know, kids on the bus and insulin's your bus driver, when the bus driver is tired out, the kids go crazy because his job is to keep everything calm and steady. And so if you are somebody who's noticing some of these symptoms, fatigue, brain fog, crappy, snappy, moody, you know, craving things, check your blood sugars, get a Keto Mojo, get a, what is it? A Lingo, I think from Amazon. Mm-hmm. It's a continuous glucose monitor for $50. Look at that. And then look at your blood work. And you might want to pull in some of these B vitamin specific ones. Cause now this is the third B vitamin we've talked about, really to support your body. Because again, this is far beyond just the diet and the carbohydrates.
Yeah. And you can't unfortunately get the right dosing of these B vitamins from like a B complex. A lot of people take just a B complex or a blend, but you need specific higher dosing of these B vitamins in like the 50 to 200 milligram range for each of them. And you just aren't going to get that from B complex. So a lot of times you have to supplement with them individually to get what you need for the amino acid levels. So number four is mitochondrial dysfunction. So insulin, everything, guys, in the body requires energy. Like every production, every system requires energy. Insulin signaling and glucose uptake both require energy. I actually talked about this on my stories the other day, and I made a reel about it this week around GLP-1s. GLP-1s are very taxing to the body because of what they're asking the body to do constantly. Having to manage glucose, having to make sure that the body's maintaining as much muscle as possible, keeping blood sugars in a range, like all of that is very energy intensive. And if your mitochondria are not working properly, guess what? Energy drops, reactive oxygen species increase, oxidative stress increase, inflammation increases, and it will indirectly impair insulin signaling. And this is again where we end up in the chronic stress, because guess what drives down mitochondrial function? Stress on the cell. So we're talking inflammation, we're talking infection, we're talking mold, we're talking gut dysfunction, we're talking nutrient deficiencies, we're talking not enough sleep, recovery, all of these things. Or if you're asking too much of your mitochondria, people that are on 5 different peptides that are all spinning the mitochondria, your mitochondria is basically like an engine. You cannot push your engine to 120 miles an hour all day, every day. It will start to fume. It will start to not work properly. It'll start to break down, right? It'll break down much faster than it's supposed to. And so you need the right amount of energy and the right amount of recovery for the mitochondria, the right amount of stress, the right amount of healing, right? Exercise is a stressor. Dieting too much is a stressor. Cold therapy is a stressor. Sauna is a stressor. All of these things are good stressors in the right amounts, but if you're doing them constantly, you are going to run into problems with energy production. You need the mitochondria to be able to heal in certain ways. And so mitochondria are probably the earliest markers of biological aging that we see. And we'll see this on labs with like an LDH level is below a 185. A carbon dioxide, a CO2 marker is below a 24, right? You start to see these white blood cells, I find, when those start to go low. All of these things are chronic stress indicators for that mitochondria. And you can start to pick up on trends to see, okay, this is a mitochondrial problem for this person. And honestly, everything comes back to the cell and the mitochondria and nature. Like that's where cellular medicine got its name. Like everyone talks about starting with detox or gut health or all these things. Like you have to start with the cell, because if the mitochondria can't manage fighting the fight you're about to ask it to fight with increasing detoxification, increasing gut health, you're not going to feel very good, and it's not going to work how you want it to work.
Yeah. So a lot of times when we're thinking about, I'm going to go in after all of these infections, all of these mold mycotoxins that I see, maybe it's fungal, you know, in terms of like a candida infection that we pick up or whatever it might be, we want to build the body up first. We want to give it what it needs to properly detoxify. I did see a reel yesterday from Dr. Noah, and I thought it was really good in terms of like, you shouldn't just be pushing through. You shouldn't feel worse before you feel better. That's a big red flag to me that you're pushing detox too hard and your body is not in a place that can handle it. And a lot of times that comes down to various vitamins and minerals that are needed to run a lot of these enzymatic functions, these detoxification processes, whether it's methylation, sulfation, acetylation, a variety of processes in the body. And one of those key minerals is potassium. So that's number 5 here is potassium deficiency. This is vital for glucose uptake in the muscle cells through insulin signaling pathways. So low potassium disrupts those pathways, making insulin worse. We also know that this plays a crucial role in terms of proper hydration. When we are tiring out, potassium is one of the first minerals to get depleted in terms of, again, that chronic stress. It plays a really important role in your bowel movements and making muscles contract and being able to move things through the body. So incorporate potassium-rich foods or add supplements. Potassium chloride is the best form. Look at maybe a 1-to-1 at minimum ratio with your electrolytes. We love Element, but I do add some potassium, and that could be as simple as like a little bit of cream of tartar. So even if you don't have a potassium supplement at home, you can do this through cream of tartar. You can add, celery juice. You can add coconut water. Mm-hmm. Avocados, leafy greens, a variety of things can really help in terms of potassium. The next one's estrogen dominance. What is an estrogen causing a problem with, right? Especially when it's imbalanced, related to other hormones in the body. So we need estrogen, but we need a balance. Elevated estrogen levels interfere with our insulin sensitivity because it disrupts our GLUT4 transporter, reducing glucose uptake into the muscle and fat cells. So that imbalance often leads to poor glucose control. We see this a lot with things like PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome, which generally we're going to see high androgens, high insulin, a variety of things on lab work that can just tell us that this person is really in this situation, either because of classic PCOS or because of inflammatory PCOS, adrenal-based PCOS, where they're making too many androgens, and post-birth control PCOS as well. And so assessing that is really important. And then most importantly, just supporting your body's ability to properly detox estrogen. Again, yep. Something we've talked about many times, but we think about sulforaphane or brassicas. We think about calcium deglucarate, a little bit of DIM, things that are really going to help push estrogen down the right pathway out of the body. And that will support your overall health, but also improve your insulin sensitivity.
Mm-hmm. Number 7 is fungal load and mycotoxins. So mycotoxins hit insulin resistance in a number of different ways. They deplete B1, thiamine, probably the biggest one. They deplete B2. They damage the mitochondria and they increase cortisol or stress on the system. All 4 of those will worsen glucose handling, which we just talked about. Those are like 4 of the first 6 that we've gone through. And so research shows that certain mycotoxins also increase oxidative stress and disrupt the mitochondrial function. And so this candida overgrowth that can also happen then increases inflammation, adrenal stress, which is another hit to glucose control. So people with candida often also crave carbohydrates and they crave sugar because of the candida kind of fueling that craving. And so we see a lot of times they end up overeating carbohydrates, which then just worsens the glucose management that's already a problem to begin with. So mycotoxins and mold can be a big root issue that needs to be supported properly with the deficiencies that it can cause. And number 8, circadian rhythm disruptions. So sunlight, sleep, and glucose regulation. Your circadian clock controls literally everything in the body. Every organ in your body runs with the sun. And so it controls cortisol, melatonin. They have an indirect, like a opposite response. So when cortisol is high, melatonin should be low and vice versa. It controls insulin sensitivity. You tend to be, there's a belief that like you're more insulin sensitive in the morning time if you have a healthy circadian rhythm. Liver glucose production, your body actually starts pushing out glucose when cortisol starts rising. It's like the dawn effect. And people that have a really dysregulated immune system or a lot of dysregulation with cortisol, we'll see glucose is actually higher upon waking than it is postprandial. And that's often because the liver produces and exports glycogen to keep the immune system fueled because your immune system runs on glucose. I would say that is not listed in this list, but it kind of underlies all of this. So your immune system is fueled by glucose and sugar. And so when the immune system is dysregulated, it's going to keep you in a sugar burning state. And we see that a lot of times where people have fasted blood sugars that are elevated, but their A1C is actually not that high. And that a lot of times is because the liver is trying to fuel the immune system with glucose. And research shows that morning sunlight can improve glucose uptake. Circadian misalignment increases blood sugar, even in healthy people. And shift workers have significantly higher diabetes risk. And I would say probably overall chronic disease risk, because it's just awful for your body not to live with the sun. We're meant to live with the sun. And this is one of the most underrated metabolic tools. Like, get sunlight or some type of bright light, 10,000 lux lights. You can buy them on Amazon, the happy light for $30 or $40. Get it in your eyes within 30 minutes of waking.
Yes. So, so important. And you'll notice a natural shift in your energy throughout the day as well. I mean, for me, I've talked about this recently on my stories, and I know we talked about this in podcast too. When the sun is not shining, I am just dragging, right? Because we are in the Midwest. It's been very snowy. There's a complete difference though of sun shining, beautiful snow. We walked yesterday outside. It was 23 degrees and it was great. But today, or like, you know, other days, it's been like really just like gloomy and forecast. You just feel like you want to lay down and take a nap, you know? And so that sunshine really does make a huge difference. And I find a huge difference in my mood as well. So if you can't get it, simulate it. A 10,000 lux happy light is one of the best ways that you can do that. And then just really kind of keeping yourself busy and on point, you know, with what you need to do in your task and kind of ignoring what's going on outside around you. Number 9, last but not least, leaky gut and chronic inflammation. So we know that endotoxins, they take a huge toll on the body, but definitely they impair insulin signaling. And so when our gut barrier breaks down, we have things that seep out into the bloodstream, lipopolysaccharides. These are endotoxins. They enter circulation. They go to the liver. Your liver responds and says, oh shit, I gotta protect myself. I'm going to create inflammation. This is non-alcoholic fatty liver. This is high triglycerides. This is low bile flow. This is really, really important because also this impairs signaling, insulin signaling. Okay. So lipopolysaccharide exposure is associated with that impaired glucose uptake, poor liver function, higher insulin levels, metabolic syndrome. We have an epidemic of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. And a lot of times it has nothing to do with even the person's diet. It has everything to do with the internal terrain. And I'm actually making a guide on that that will launch early 2026, because so many people are so confused by this. And we don't get the education from our conventional doctors, especially when they take your gallbladder out. Like that is, hey, this is just a fast track to non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. We think about NSAIDs. We think about proton pump inhibitors, where we're suppressing the stomach acid because of acid reflux rather than addressing the root cause. We think about birth control. We think about all of these things that are in our environment today that the body is having to handle without support. And this is basically the open door for leaky gut and non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. But again, they're not making these connections to help you understand why these things are actually happening. And if you don't have good drainage and detoxification, you're going to end up with a system that's very bogged down, and you're going to see that at some point in time show up on your labs. The good news is you can reverse it. We've helped many clients reverse non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, save their gallbladders, all those things. And so if you found this, you know, helpful, let us know, share it, tag us on social media, rate, review, subscribe, and share the show. We're going to go back to doing monthly giveaways for reviews starting in January. So make sure that you are doing that, whatever podcast platform you listen on. I know that on iTunes, it's the easiest to do that there. But as we wrap this up, I just want to, you know, remind you that we talked about these 9 drivers of insulin resistance, but what does insulin resistance do to us long-term? Every single one of these increases oxidative stress, inflammation, mitochondrial aging, visceral fat, burdens our liver, and disrupts our hormones. And so if you're somebody right now who says, hey, I'm doing everything right, I'm struggling to lose weight. Everything I do with dietary changes, cleaning up my diet, like we hear all the time, I eat clean, but you don't feel better. You don't have better energy. You don't have vibrancy. You don't have good stamina. You don't have good workouts. Something is off in the body. And so you can always click the link in the show notes to book a call with our team. You can do a lab review as a one-off with our team to help you understand at a comprehensive level what's going on with all 11 systems of the body. Many more markers than your conventional doctors will ever run, because this is the deeper metabolic work truly that people need. And I wish that it was something our conventional healthcare system offered, but unfortunately they don't.